Chapter 4, Green Tomato Pie is the recipe. Her cat, Alice's mother shrieked after Alice returned home from Mr. Ogden's office with Laredo's carrying case balanced precariously on her handlebars. It's some kind of joke. What about the recipe? How? Alice dreaded being the one to have to deliver the news. She left it to Laredo, Mom. What do you mean, she left it to Laredo? How do you have leave a recipe to a cat? I don't know, Alice answered honestly. Aunt Polly told me she kept the secret in her head. Surely Mr. Ogden explained it to you. Alice told her mom what Mr. Ogden had said about his new job was only to inform her of what Polly had decided to do with the recipe, not to explain why. That's ridiculous, huffed Alice's mother. I'm going to call Mr. Ogden right now and get to the bottom of this nonsense. Meanwhile, Alice's father was dealing with a completely different issue. Achoo! He sneezed the minute he laid eyes on Laredo. Highly allergic, even the word cat would set him off. Achoo! 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 Mrs. Anderson reappeared a few times after looking ashen. The phone call to Mr. Ogden had not gone well. Although he had confirmed that the pie crust recipe had indeed been passed on to Laredo, Polly Portman had provided absolutely no instructions in her will on how this would be accomplished. I should have known it was too good to be true, Alice's mother said, putting her head in her hands. The recipe is worth millions, but Polly decided she'd rather throw it away than give it to us. Not only that, but without the recipe shop, what good will the souvenir stand be now? There, there, Ruthie, don't cry, said Mr. Anderson, comforting his wife. I'm sure there's an explanation. Perhaps Mr. Ogden misplaced the page of the will. Alice shook her head. There's only one page, she said to her father. Still, there must be some reason she's done what she's done, he insisted as he pinched his nose to stifle an oncoming sneeze. She hated me, George, Alice's mother wailed. That's the reason. Aunt Polly didn't hate you, Mom, Alice said. She didn't hate anyone. How can you defend her for what she's done? Her mother shouted through her tears. Clearly, your precious aunt didn't care about any of us, not even you, Alice. Her mother's words stung, even though in her heart, Alice knew that it couldn't be true. Aunt Polly had loved her. She was certain of that. Still, she couldn't help but wondering what her aunt could have been thinking, leaving something so valuable to a cat. What are we going to do, George? Alice's mother cried. What are we going to do? Take the cat up to your room, Alice, her father said quietly, and find him something to do his business in. Your mother and I need to talk. Aunt Polly had kept a covered cat box for Laredo at her bathroom and on the floor under the sink, and it was filled with sand and a little hinged door so that she would have privacy when he went inside. The best Alice could come up with was a cardboard shoebox, which she filled with ripped-up newspaper and placed it in the corner of the room. She went downstairs to the kitchen and came back up with two little bowls, one for water and one for the tuna fish, which was the closest things to sardines that she could find. Laredo was still in the carrying case, watching her every move with his scary yellow eyes. Alice was afraid to get too close, so she finally got up the nerve to let him out. She used a bent coat hanger to pull the zipper. The second flap fell open, and Laredo streaked out of the case and scooted under the bed, hissing all the way. He stayed there for the rest of the day. When 6 o'clock rolled around, Alice's stomach was rumbling like an empty garbage can rolling down a hill. But downstairs, there was no sign of dinner. Her father was parked at the kitchen table reading the newspaper. News travels fast in a small town like Ipswich, and the headline read, Pie Queen Leaves Secret Recipe to Cat. Where's Mom? She asked. Gone to bed with a sick headache, he answered, reaching for a napkin to wipe his mouth. In front of him on the table was a half-eaten piece of pie. Where did you get that from? Alice asked. I found it in the back of the fridge, he said. There's one piece left if you want it. Alice crossed the room to the refrigerator and pulled open the door. On the bottom shelf between the jar of dill pickles and a head of lettuce, she saw a tin pie plate containing a single slice of lemon chiffon pie. It seemed like only yesterday that Alice had pricked the bottom of that pie shell 5 times with a fork and sat on the red stool while Aunt Polly crushed ginger snaps, peeled thin yellow curls of lemon skin to decorate the top with. It's a little past its prime, commented Alice's father from behind the newspaper, but it's still delicious. Alice got a fork from the drawer and carried the pie tin upstairs, where Laredo was still hiding under the bed, the bowl of tuna fish untouched. Aunt Polly and Alice had been alike in many ways, but when it came to eating pie, they were opposites. Like most people, Aunt Polly would start at the front of the slice and work her way back, but Alice always began by breaking off the crisp edges of the crust and moving forward, saving the tip, her favorite part, for last. Sitting cross-legged on the bed, Alice began to eat the pie. Having spent nearly a week in the fridge, the pie crust was not as crisp as it had once been, but there was the first bite of lemony mousse hit her tongue. Alice closed her eyes and smiled. Why is it called chiffon? She remembered asking her aunt. Chiffon is a kind of fabric, Polly explained, cool and silky and lighter than air, and like those white puffs your breath makes when it's cold outside. Yes, sweet girl, said Aunt Polly, leaning over to kiss the top of Alice's head exactly like that. Each bite brought back more happy memories until all too soon Alice reached the end of the pie. The tip had always been her favorite, but this time, when she pierced the pale yellow triangle and brought it to her lips, a single tear rolled down her cheek. It was the last time she would ever taste one of Aunt Polly's pies. Later, she put on her pajamas and brushed her teeth and then crawled under the covers and read for a while until her eyelids began to droop. It was 8:30 and she turned out the light, and after a minute she heard Lardo come out from under the bed and walk across the room. There was a full moon that night, so enough light coming through the window that Alice could see him gulping down the tuna in great greedy bites. He must have been starving after 3 days alone in the apartment, probably scared too. For the first time, it occurred to Alice that she and Lardo must have something in common. You miss her too, don't you? Alice whispered. She had always been afraid of Lardo because maybe with time she could learn to love him. After all, Aunt Polly loved him. As she watched Lardo lick the last of the tuna fish from his whiskers, Alice felt another song coming on. 3 sardines and a little blue plate, all in a neat little line. Now that Aunt Polly has left us, did you know that you're legally mine? She sang it softly a couple times, and she tried to come up with a less technical-sounding word than legally, but it had been a long day, and she ended up falling asleep. In the middle of the night, Alice was awakened by a noise. She turned on the light, wondering if maybe Lardo had knocked something over, prowling around in the dark. He was nowhere in sight, and nothing in the room seemed out of place, so Alice decided that she must have been dreaming. Feeling a little chill, she shivered and then dove under the covers and went back to sleep. Alice was not the only one awake in the middle of the night that night. Mayor Needleman was suffering a bout of indigestion and had gotten up to make himself a Bramo seltzer. As he stood in the kitchen sink in his bathrobe, sipping the bubbling concoction, he happened to look out the window and see a big green Chevrolet roll by with his headlights off. Who on earth could that be at this hour, he wondered, and then he burped loudly and went back to bed. The next morning, when Alice woke up, she discovered that Lardo had left an unpleasant little surprise next to the shoebox. She cleaned up the mess and carefully checking to make sure the door had been latched tight, went downstairs to get breakfast for herself and to see if she could rustle up another can of tuna fish for Lardo. "Ah, chew!" her father greeted her from behind the morning newspaper. "Bless you," Alice said. Alice's mother was standing at the sink, hunched over a big bowl, stirring something vigorously with a wooden spoon. She stirred. White clouds of flour rose from the bowl and fell like a dusting of powdery snow on the floor at her feet. There was a carton of cream and tin cocoa powder sitting next to the counter nearby. Alice was pleased to see that her mother had recovered from her headache and was feeling up to doing a little cooking. She took this as a good sign. "What are you making, Mom?" she asked. Her father, his nose buried deep in the newspaper, shifted uncomfortably in the chair. "Your mother's making a pie," he said. "A pie?" exclaimed Alice, unable to hide her shock. Alice's mother turned, her scowling face smudged with flour. There were dark circles under her eyes. Clearly, she hadn't slept. "That's right," she said, "a pie. For the first time in 13 years, somebody other than Polly is going to win the blueberry. And I don't see any reason why it shouldn't be me." Alice could think of a very good reason. As far as she knew, her mother had never made a pie in her life. "Thanks to your aunt's generosity," her mother continued. "Your dad's out of a job. Reverend Flowers has the pie shop. And what do we have?" "Ah, chew!" Alice's father sneezed right on cue. "Precisely," said Mrs. Anderson bitterly. "So, yes, I'm making a pie. And unlike my sister, when I win my blueberry, I'll have good sense to sell my recipe and not leave it to a cat." She turned back to the bowl and resumed stirring. "You don't need to do this, Ruthie," Alice's father said. "I'll put a call into Hoover tomorrow, and if they can't take me back, I'm sure I'll find something else. You're not the only one who's going to be looking for work, George. Without P-I-E, pie, everybody in town is going to be scrambling," said Alice's mother. It is true. A lot of folks in Ipswich were already worried. Dick Caperfew, the owner of the Ipsy Inn, had gotten many calls from people canceling their reservations. He only had one guest occupied at the moment. The business downtown had slowed to a snail's pace. The diner was so quiet that you could hear a fork drop, and Melanie Needleman couldn't stop complaining about the impact of Polly's death was going to have on her husband's campaign. If only she could have hung on until the election, she said to the mayor just that morning over coffee. He nodded, pretending to listen, but his mind was elsewhere. "Pumpkin," he'd said with a sigh. His wife smiled, thinking of the new term of endearment. But when she questioned him about it, the mayor confessed that it was actually Polly Portman's pumpkin pie he had been mooning over. "I've been such an awful craving for it since she passed. It's driving me to distraction." Mayor Needleman was not the only one in town who'd been suffering from pie withdrawal. Dolores Evans, the cashier at the A&P, had been rushed to the emergency room that day with heart palpitations. The doctor sent her with instructions to take 2 aspirin and try not to think about banana cream pie. "You remember the way Polly always made it," the mayor had gone on, "with that wonderful crumbly stuff on top? It's called streusel, Henry. It's extremely fattening and delicious," he'd added wistfully. Melanie Needleman had frowned at her husband. "How can you think of a pie at a time like this? The future of Ipswich is hanging in the balance. But to be honest," she had been thinking about Polly's low-calorie buttermilk pie for days, wondering how on earth she would ever stick to her diet without it. It had even occurred to her that she might try making one herself, which quickly led to the fantasy of what would happen if she entered her own pie in a certain contest and won. A blueberry in the family would be wonders to perk up the mayor's campaign. Back at Alice's house, Alice's mother was having a similar thought. She scooped up the flour in the canister and sprinkled it on the counter. She had scraped the contents of the mixing bowl out into and flowered spot with a rubbered spatula. Who knows, she said, after I win my blueberry, maybe I'll open up a shop of my own. Ha! That would show Polly. I mean, really, how hard can it be to make a pie? Alice watched her Aunt Polly make many pies, so she knew that the pie dough was supposed to look like, and it was not gray and wet and a gloppy mess her mother had just plopped down on the counter. But Alice knew better than to say anything. Has anyone seen the rolling pin? Alice's mom was rummaging around the drawer. I know it's here somewhere. And there's a bag of raisin bread sitting on the table. Alice was hungry, so she took out a slice and popped it into the toaster. Do you have any more tuna fish? She asked while she waited for the bread to toast. Lardo ate a whole can of it last night, and I think he likes it. It's almost as much as fried sardines. Look in the cupboard, Alice's mom told her, behind the baked beans, but consider it his last meal. What do you mean? Alice asked. I called the pound this morning, and they're expecting us to drop him off at 10. Mom, Alice said, Alice, choosing her words carefully, since it was obvious that her mother was in no mood to be crossed. Aunt Polly gave Lardo to me. Shouldn't it be up to me to decide what happens to him? Mr. Anderson lowered his paper and peered at his daughter over the top of his glasses. Don't sass your mother, he warned. I'm not sassing, Alice explained. I'm asking. The last thing we need in this house is another mouth to feed, Alice's mother told her. Polly may have found her little parting gift amusing, but I do not. Say your goodbyes to that cat and have him ready to go at 10. Now, where on earth is that rolling pin? The toast popped up, but Alice wasn't hungry anymore. As her mother continued to dig through the drawers, Alice went to the cupboard, unable to find any tuna fish, settled on a can of clam chowder instead, and with a heavy heart, she carried it upstairs. Aunt Polly had always been so kind to her. How could Alice let her down by allowing Lardo to go and end up at the pound? If only she could think of something to change her mother's mind. In her room, Alice poured the clam chowder into a bowl and plopped down on the bed to wait. If Lardo was hungry enough, she might come out to eat his breakfast, even though she was still in the room. After 15 minutes, when she hadn't heard so much as a hiss out of him, Alice leaned over the side of the bed, taking her life in her own hands, carefully lifted the dust ruffle and peeked under. No Lardo. She quickly checked under the bureau, behind the desk and in the closet. Still no Lardo. Alice had to double-check the door before she had gone downstairs. She was sure of that. So the cat couldn't be anywhere in the house. That's when she noticed the window was open. That's strange, she said to herself. Alice was certain she had closed that window before she had gone to bed. Her bedroom was on the second floor, and just outside the window was a beautiful old elm tree, whose branches grew so close to the house that on windy nights they sometimes rapped against the window panes like the ghostly knuckles. Alice hurried across the room to close the window, but her heart sank when she saw the unmistakable mark of the cat's paw on the windowsill. She was too late. Lardo had escaped.